13:23.
I promise I will not judge any person only as a teenager.
A youth perspective on national current affairs. On 13:23 today, we look at a study into missing persons in Australia. But first, this week's headlines.
It's drugs, drugs and more drugs this week with the news, with five locations being identified for safe injecting houses in Victoria, which are due to be operating by the end of this year on a trial basis. Final legislation is still to be passed. However, both the Victorian Premier and Health Minister have reported that they feel confident the safe injecting houses will be approved through State Parliament. The houses will only be able to be used by adults and cannot be located near kindergartens, schools, shops or homes.
Meanwhile, the Law Council of Australia has spoken out in support of safe injecting houses, saying that criminal law alone will never solve drug abuse issues. The council has also called for the re-establishment of a heroin prescription trial in the ACT and the decriminalisation of cannabis. And finally, Health Minister Michael Wooldridge has instigated a House of Representatives committee to research the impact of drugs on society. The federal government inquiry will look at the effects of both legal and illegal substances.
What is the explanation? Who knows?
Missing Persons, Issues, Incidences and Impacts was released by the Australian Institute of Criminology. We spoke to Sergeant Wayne Wilson of the Victorian Police Media Department, a woman who had earlier in her life been classed as missing, and Carol Keenan from the National Missing Persons Unit, who was a key researcher of the report.
It's really actually the first comprehensive report that we have made into missing persons, and both in Australia and overseas it's being read widely. And it showed that 30,000 people are reported missing in Australia each year. And of that, 99.5% of them, so nearly all of them, are located most very quickly within hours that they're being reported to police. But the concern is that a third of those people have gone missing before and under similar circumstances. What we're really trying to encourage Australians to do is to let someone know. If you're out of contact with your family, let someone know that you are safe and well.
What are some of the main reasons that young people leave home or go missing in the first place?
There's so many different reasons of why people leave home. The main one often is communication issues or a desire to decide their own destiny, to be free of people telling them what to do. But there's reasons of mental illness, there's economic problems, there's sexuality issues that they're finding very difficult to address. There's sometimes they're running away from some form of abuse. A whole range of different reasons. It's an age-old issue that it's often difficult to talk to, say, parents or guardians when you're a teenager. You feel that they don't understand your issues. And so there's a detachment that occurs. And many of the families of missing people have said that what they've realised is that if they can encourage their young teenage children to talk to someone, even if it isn't actually the parents, but some significant person within the family, sometimes it might be a grandparent or a trusted aunt or an uncle, that they can actually talk through the problems. And through talking through the issue, there can be resolution. So that devastating impact on the family when someone goes missing and on the person themselves when they are detached from their family, then that can be softened.
Never going back. No, 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 I'm never going back.
It is important sometimes for us to be able to detach, to have a chance to go and stay somewhere else with another family or with some friends, but to let someone know where we're going. The study showed that when people were located, a significant number of them and those friends hadn't actually let the family know that they were there. Now, that's often a loyalty and a protection of their friends, which is quite honourable and laudable, but when it causes such devastation to the family who doesn't know, then that's really a problem that can be addressed. You know, we can let someone know that we're safe and well while keeping our whereabouts confidential for a period of time. And the police are very happy to do that. There is no need for them to let the family know exactly the location of the missing person, but at least they can let the family know that the missing person is safe and that contact will be made sometime in the future, possibly when the situation has become a little less explosive.
What kind of, I guess, life experiences have the young people who have left home or run away from home had Did you get that kind of information, or?
No, unfortunately the study actually focused on the families left behind rather than on the missing people. It's something that we would really like to encourage research institutions to do further research in this area, both on prevention, you know, what are the sorts of things that could have been done which would have meant that the missing person did not detach from the family unit, but also what were the experiences when they were detached. Anecdotally, and when I actually speak to people on the phone who are actually apart from their families, it's very difficult. The whole network is not there, and so they are very vulnerable to the situations on the streets that we know about, you know, crime, having to make an income, what sort of housing, you know, all those sorts of issues become very, very important, and the more the lack of support there, the more vulnerable they are.
Down to the streets, I will roam. I hate no bed, I hate no home. And there was nothing that I
Is it the case that a lot of young people who run away from home do become homeless?
Again, we haven't got enough evidence to say that. It is true that most people are located quickly, so it's only a small percentage that are away from their families for any length of time. But one would have to think that some of them are homeless. And also of concern to the National Missing Persons Unit is how many of them have never been reported missing. How long have they been apart from their families, and has the family disintegrated to the point where no one actually has reported them missing in the first place? So, yes, we say 30,000 people are reported missing each year. What of the people who aren't reported?
Sergeant Wilson says there is a priority order for dealing with reports of missing persons.
Obviously, if a person's been involved in an abduction or something like that, certain resources are removed because you've got the, obviously, foul play as a factor in there. Whereas a person who may decide to just want to leave home, you wouldn't put the same resources into it, and that's sort of a basic start. So you establish if there's a crime in relation to the missing person, or if it's perhaps a non-suspicious situation where a person's gone of their own free will.
And with young people specifically, you find that's the majority of the cases in which missing persons lie?
I'd have to say the majority of young people leaving was basically for their own particular reason, be it a dispute or they wanted to do something else, or perhaps they wanted to go with their friends who were going somewhere else. The majority of those were in that category, and they did this, I suppose, with the teenage group who would be involved in that. And unfortunately, a lot of this could be just solved if they just, you know, put in a phone call saying, look, I've left home for a while, and let their relatives know that they're okay, because the relatives tend to think the worst situation. But we carry out normal checks if it's a missing person in relation. You check with friends who perhaps give an idea that they've had some troubles at school or something, and they may have just wanted to, you know, take some time out somewhere and go for a while. So it comes back to, again, priorities and the best way we can deal with the situation. Of course, then when the youngsters are found and located, perhaps some sort of help or counselling to maybe get over some of their problems which may have induced them to go in the first place.
Judy, who now lives at Batons Bay, ran away from home several times when she was young.
At the time, I probably wasn't aware of really what I was doing. But, it was tricky. There was a lot of us. We had a lot of people living in houses, quite a community, actually. I first left when I was 16. We squatted a few times. Getting money was always a struggle, I suppose. And staying at school as well, that's something I always wanted to do. I got our study and I also worked part-time. It was a wonderful time. Definitely something that had to be done in my youth, or it could never happen again, probably.
what were the factors that influenced your decision to leave home in the first place?
Oh, I was very ready for it. I think when you're young, you 16, you're becoming who you are. You're no longer the child. You want to do something for yourself, and yeah, that can cause clashes in the household with your parents. But and I was just ready to live independently, make my decisions, and do what I wanted when I wanted to do it.
How did your parents react to that, I guess?
I didn't realise, but I guess she took it really hard. She would worry. And it's only when you sort of reach 22 or something, you turn around and think, wow, I put my mother through all of that. I think she realised that it's something I had to do, and different people choose to live differently.
Do you think that sometimes that idea of young people leaving home so early, I guess, and getting independent so early, is frowned upon?
I guess it's pretty confronting for the rest of the community. I think the idea of the group house situation is something uniquely Australian, probably relating to the USA as well. But from being in England for a while, it's not so common over there. People don't, they more move out into a marriage situation. So we're lucky in a way that it can happen in Australia. And sure, it's difficult, but at least it's possible.
For people who maybe don't understand, I guess, the idea of staying in contact with your parents maybe while you have left home or something like that, mm-hmm. could you maybe provide, I don't know, your interpretation of why some people don't stay in contact with their parents and cut that contact altogether?
Well, with my own father, because they don't trust the person who's going out there, they won't... Sure, it's difficult for both parties involved and probably really hard for the parents to see them go and let them go and wonder what they're doing. But if they've brought their child up to the best that they can, I think they've got to believe in themselves and the child that it will be okay. Things will turn around eventually, but this is something the person has to go through, this moving out process. And to be supportive, even if that supportive role means taking the back seat for a while, might be a few years before they can become friends again and see each other on a regular basis. But just to have that trust, I think it's really important. I think there needs to be support if people want to move out, definitely, or if people have to move out, especially at a young age, of course. It's tricky support. What does that mean? Does that mean benefits or education about it? I think it should be taught in schools, yeah, definitely, the practical side of life. It's going to happen anyway. It's happening, so the education system has to keep up with it. As for the welfare system, it's tricky too. I mean, support needs to be there. The loopholes people have to go through to get that support is ridiculous sometimes. And I've noticed nowadays it's a lot harder than it was in my time to be able to get some government support to move out. Because as well as the government support, you always need a part-time job as well. It's not like you're just relying on that. But as a stepping stone, it needs to be there. There was nothing that I owed.
That's it for this week's show. Next week, we'll be looking at the interim report into the youth allowance recently brought out by the federal government.
If you are or know of a young artist or band who would like to be featured on 1323, please get in touch.
Contributions are welcome. Contact 1323 at 4ZZZ, PO Box 509, Fortitude Valley, 4006, Queensland. Fax 07-3252-1950, phone number 07-3252-155. You can email 1323 at the.pod@itsm.com.au. 1323.
Produced by Lucas Moore and Heather Anderson for ComradeSat.